As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
On today's episode of The Glue Guys, we're going to talk about the uneven weekend that the Brooklyn Nets had. Some highs, some lows, and some middles. Plus, if we get desperate, I do have some Kyrie Irving trade possibilities. There's some context that we need to discuss, though, leading into it.
Oh, we'll get desperate, Mike, if I have anything to do with it.
Before we get started with the show, this podcast is brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on demand. Learn more at DirecTV.com. Back to the Glue Guys. This is Mike Arsalo O'Brien. Check us out on Twitter at BKGlueGuysNetsDaily.com. The Athletic. Get yourself by that paywall at TheAthletic.com/GlueGuys.
Right, Michael. Are we back?
The Nets.
Are we?
It's your call. Disappointment.
It's your call. I can't tell. It's sort of back. It's somewhere. It's had we beaten beaten the Bulls last night.
That would have been.
Yeah, we'd have been real back. We just sort of expected to lose that game, though. And isn't that sort of an indicator of where we feel like this team is, Mike? Let's get into it. Let's get into the game.
Well, tell me. No, you seem to have a thought about it. Where is this team? They had won 5 in a row going into that Bulls game. I think we should state that loudly and clearly. The Nets had been on a 5-game winning streak.
We've been on a tear. We've been looking good.
Yeah.
Things have been clicking. But at the same time, we sort of like, I don't know. In my heart of hearts, I felt like everyone was sort of complacent, or like not complacent. How to say this exactly? Everyone was okay.
Prepared to lose that game.
Yeah.
Yes.
In a certain sense. And then they did, you know, lose steam and not win the game. Second half of a back to back, blah, 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 all the things, you know. But at the same time, it's like we had been a team that was the stackedest of all stacked out there. And now we're sort of like okay with losing steam in the fourth quarter to like a good better than expected Bulls team, but by no means a world beater, you know. But that's sort of where we are, Mike. It's kind of funny
that you say they're not a world. I'm
You're
super
bullish.
Impressed
You're
by the bullish. Bulls. I am bullish. Yeah. They had lineups where pretty much every time on the floor there was at least three guys who could get buckets.
Yeah.
You know, like real shot makers. DeMar DeRozan, while he isn't a three-point shooter, gets buckets. LaVine, obviously, he was actually 0-for-4 from 3, but he's an elite scorer. Vucevic, who is the classic guy that actually kills the Nets in this game,
pretty
did really well rebounding.
Yeah,
but didn't kill the team in the normal. There's just a lot. Lonzo Ball, Alex Caruso.
Yeah,
Dissanumo, who was like a spark plug.
Did you watch him at the end of the game where he like had a cheeky, he just basically like full court pressed with 20 seconds left to go in a 20 point blowout and got like super hyped on it, that to then just get inbound the ball and then run out the clock for them. It's like, all right, guys. But anyways, that's all well and good. I'm just less, it's a good start and they look great. But I think in terms of world beaterness, I've now come to this like stupid Skip Bayless like side of the thing where it's like elite bucket getters are actually, there's like a pretty significant tier system there. Zach LaVine's there, but that's kind of their only one, and he's still sort of an unproven commodity down the line. But dude, that guy is really good. He was like, every shot he takes, he gets tons of separation on that fadeaway. He's got a real weapon now, a go-to weapon that is working. So he's got it, he's figured it out. But I think they're in need of just a couple. I don't think that you said like DeRozan's like a, you know, his like walking bucketness is still sort of up for debate for me. He doesn't have enough in the bag to be that echelon. But anyways, that's not the point. You disagree with that?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I think he's proven that if anything, he is a walking bucket. He's been scoring 27 points a game per game this year, and he's averaged over 20 points a game, dating all the way back to the 2013.
Empty calories, Mike. You know those are empty cals.
He could. Let's not, Brian. This is a bad take, but I'm just gonna say this: if anyone is a walking bucket in the NBA, it's DeMar DeRozan. Like that's
my definition has changed now that I've watched.
What is your definition of?
Well, it's Kevin Durant, and
bucket.
Anything else is below is beneath him. I've become.
But who
jaded.
Cares? This isn't a Bulls podcast.
Yeah, shut up! Shut up, guys!
Give
shut
a
up!
Crap about the
shut
Bulls.
Up, Brian and Mike.
By the way, I'm looking at the advanced box score of the Nets Bulls game, and I don't know if this is a glitch or if this is in fact the truth. They have individual offensive and defensive rating for players, and that is a fraught statistic. It's not actually like, if you listen to Seth Partnow, who used to be the head of analytics for the Milwaukee Bucks, he's a co-host on the Athletic NBA show, their Nerder She Wrote pod. He says individual offensive and defensive ratings, I believe this is what he states, are a crock of S. Mm. But Bruce Brown had a 0 offensive rating in that Bulls game. That's not good. A 0 offensive rating means you didn't do anything. Bruce Brown shot 0 of 8 from the field. He only took 1 3-pointer. He didn't get to the free throw line. He took 8 shots, missed them all, had 0 assists. So essentially on offense, besides screens, which he was a devastating force screening, he did nothing. How big of a deal, Brian? I feel like I know your answer. How big of a deal should we be making of this Bulls game? Because the other 5 wins leading into this game were against not really impressive teams. The Hawks was a big win. Toronto had been playing well, but the Pistons are bad. The Pacers not at full strength, and then they played the Pistons twice. How big of a deal should we make of this loss against the Bulls?
It's not. I mean, there's something there. It's not a big deal, grand scheme of things, but it does. Like I was saying to begin, like I think there is something indicative about our ceilingness, this regular season ceiling. Like if we go out and beat the Bulls on this night, it suggests like, oh, okay, like we actually have maybe like really clicked on and are locked in, Mike, in all the ways that that the sports analysts will tout. And I mean, it's not to say that we haven't been looking awesome. Like we, you know, like you're saying, 5-game winning streak, and I expect that the rest of this road trip will also have lots of wins associated with it. So it's like by no means any concern. I'm not at all concerned, but it is, there's a little bit of like, that's, we're just maybe one Kyrie Irving away from having no problem winning that game as well, you know? And that's, I guess that's my only takeaway. It was just like, we were prepared to lose, and why, you know, why have we become complacent in that way? If we're trying to be the Death Star in the NBA, which I don't think, you know, I don't think we can argue that we are anymore. You know?
Yeah, I think the Death Star, if we're any sort of weapon from some sci-fi fantasy movie, we're not the Death Star anymore.
We're like,
that's just really,
we're like we're a Star Destroyer, you know, one of many, one of a few. And, you know, sure, they're a problem, but, you know, not prohibitively a problem for the rest of the universe.
Yeah. And our engines can fail and we dive spear first, you know, into another Death Star. That's potentially our fate.
True. True. Yeah.
No, Without Kyrie Irving, the Nets, while still a title contender, maybe still the favorites in the East, aren't the devastating force. I think that's just been clearly proven out because what we've already discovered in this season, so Patty Mills really hasn't, he's had a few good games, but he hasn't been consistent. Part of the problem with them so far this season is that, and I love Patty Mills. He's averaging 10 points per game, 3 assists. His field goal percentage is 42% from the field. He's shooting 47% from 3. So he is having a high efficiency from 3. But his 2-point percentage is down to 32% on 2s, which is dramatically lower than he's ever been in his career. He's always been around about the 48% mark in his career. Patty Mills hasn't been consistent. There's Bruce Brown will have games where he scores and then games where he goes 0 for 8. Blake Griffin will have games where he's super impactful and then completely fade away.
Yeah.
LaMarcus Aldridge has been pretty good. No one could take shots.
He's the lone source of consistency in the bench. Yeah.
And it's hard if it's all on Harden, who's still coming back from injury, we're told. The longest hamstring injury in the history of the NBA.
Those hammies are tough. That's a tough one to come back from.
That's a tough ham hock right there.
It is. Nice.
But this team isn't that the devastating force that we're led to believe. I'm not discouraged by the Bulls game in the least bit. Can we be?
But listen to us. It's fine. Don't you think just hidden beneath the surface there is a little kernel of doubt that's sown from those types of losses?
Well, I think it's if we can stitch together a larger narrative, which, and this has been discussed many times before, the Nets shot the ball 86 times from the field. And the Bulls shot the ball 98 times. They got 12 more shots from the field than the Nets did. And that's consistent over the season so far. I would guess that probably pretty much every game so far this year, except for those Pistons games, the Nets shot the ball fewer times from the field than the other team. That's because they aren't a good rebounding team, and mostly because they're still turning over the ball too much. And James Harden will have like a random like 7 turnover game.
Yeah. Also,
and that makes it really hard.
One thing about Harden too that I've noticed, and some podcast was talking about how fast Lowry brings the ball up to get into their offensive set for the Heat. And I forget who it was. I really should credit this, but I'm not going to remember. Was basically saying they've done like some interesting like analysis of like the downstream benefits of bringing the ball up faster. And they're like, so many downstream benefits. Like you get like a bunch of just good things happen when you get into your offensive set faster, more second chance points, more opportunities to pick up like, you know, interest, like fouls and things like that. It's just like generally better for everyone. And like every time Harden just barely gets it over the half court line with 16 seconds to go on the clock. And I just wonder like, you know, how much of these, like that's a weird thing to pick up on. It's like a weird thing to pinpoint. And, but it is like part of, I think the greater sort of like macro issue with the team is just like, there is both a comfort level. Also, like they're trying to inspire themselves around defense. But for me, like, and that's fine. That seems to be clicking in a way that it kind of wasn't last year. Like people like 100%. This whole blue collar thing is cool, but I'm actually have more issues with the offense weirdly this season than I ever had before. And it's just like mostly because I can't think of, when I think of the Nets offense, all I think of is Kevin Durant, and I don't have much, and it's his like basically ISO game. And I haven't really conceived of like, what is their identity beyond that? Like, you know, it's James Harden finding his way is the other part of the identity, which is a shit identity. You know, that's not one I like.
Yeah. And like we talked about this after the Hawks game. The role players play great in that game, and Joe Harris said after the game that, I think it was the Hawks game, that the ball was moving, we're making the extra pass and all that. That's been rarer than what we usually see, which is like a little more ISO heavy, less movement, kind of like really depending on LaMarcus Aldridge to bail out. Like if KD and Harden aren't getting the shot, it's like, hey, LaMarcus, can you hit an 18-footer? And that's been fantastic this year. And I'm already feeling like we're having discussion. This is the classic after a loss vibe, right?
Yeah.
I think if we did a segment, Dr. Oz,
yeah, if we
and we did positives and negatives, which we could certainly do, I think there are more positives. The team is 7-4. They had been riding again a 5-game win streak. Kevin Durant, we don't say this enough, has been absolutely ascendant. He is back to exactly what he was before his Achilles injury. If not, he says himself that he's different. I'm not going to say he's better. Like that's almost impossible to believe that anyone could be better than what he was, but he's the best player in the NBA. Ultra efficient, devastating scorer, can get to any spot he wants to on the floor. His athleticism is not a problem at all. Remember when the conversation was, he'll be like Dirk. He'll be late stage Dirk is what he could be post his Achilles injury. I mean, all respect due to the flying German, but KD's a little bit better than late stage Dirk.
He's a little better. He's a little better. Yeah. I mean, and also you bring up a good point. Like the Raptors win was just this one time you did. The Raptors win was like the best win of the season. I think it feels that way. And like, just because it was like, that's a scrappy team at home, which they take super serial. They had every reason to like get inspired to win that game. And we just kind of shut it down in a way that a good team does. It felt like the kind of gutsy win that good teams do against other good teams, and like kind of coasted to like a 10-point win towards the end, like really kept the pressure away from them. So like if we had potted yesterday, this would be a very different podcast, Mike. That would be totally totally different, because that was a good win, and like we were saying, like we had sort of prepared our bodies for the disappointment of going into this Bulls game and probably running out of gas. Kevin Durant playing back-to-backs, though, Mike, which is interesting and good to see.
James Harden. And which is as much discussion as there is about these, again, these hamstrings, the most famous hamstrings in the greater five borough area, he continues to play big minutes. He's averaging about 34 minutes per game this year, which, you know, he had, in his career had gone up to 38 at one point, but that was... He was 26 years old. Now he's 32. 34 minutes a game is a lot. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. Coming back, I do want to have a little bit more of a James Harden discussion, because I feel a seesaw effect that's happening online that we need to discuss.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And we're back, Brian. So James Harden, and we could do this every episode. We could assess and analyze and see where he is. Sort of the inspiration for this segment is, I don't know why I'm allowing this person to get under my skin so much, but Nick Wright had tweeted a few weeks ago that James Harden is one of the worst players in the NBA. And he continues to point out how bad Harden has looked. And I don't agree fully. I do agree that he's diminished in some capacity. Obviously, the free throw rule change. I mean, he's taking less than five free throws per game this year, and he had about a six-year stretch, really an eight-year stretch, where he's basically hitting 10 or more free throws a game. So, drastic change in terms of how impactful he can be. But I just want your scout's eye, Bri. I want the scout's eye.
Okay.
If I were to ask you to be fully honest. I sat you down, strapped that polygraph to you, stripped away your Nets fandom, and just got that scout's eye. What would you say? How is James Harden playing this year?
Oh, boy. You know, it's definitely not as Nick Wright describes it, like the worst player in the NBA. That's not true. But it is hard to disagree that there is a percentage of diminishment that he's on everyone's mind in a way that is indicative of a potential lack of faith. It's a weird way to say it, but like I am every time that he does one of the Harden-esque things that we've come to know from his like highlight reels from the past, you're like, oh great, a Harden thing. Like, and that's a weird way of sort of watching James Harden, which is maybe last year and you know before the injury and years prior, it was just taken for granted that Harden just did Harden things throughout the course of a game with, you know, few lapses in consistency. Now I feel like they're very like concrete moments of Harden things, which is like a weird way of saying like he's on my radar, but it's like and it's in many ways it's like passing. He's getting a passing grade, but you're still like you're on my radar in a way that you never used to be, and that'll continue I think until like I don't know exactly what I need to see happen. But something do you get what I mean? It's like something needs to change a little bit. Like it's just, maybe I think it's ultimately if I just put like a KPI behind it, it'd be getting points in the paint. Like that's really I think like the big change that seems to. He can't take people off the dribble as consistently as he used to. If you switch off a Chris Boucher onto him, he can take him off the dribble. But if you get like a rangier wing that's more stretch, you know, stretch three or four ish, someone that's a little bit more mobile, he's not getting around him in the way that he used to, which I guess we're all going to attribute to the hamstring. Fine, good. I guess that's going to come back online at some point, we're led to believe. But in lieu of that, you know, having him not be able to be the gravity pulling dribble drive force that he used to be it's a big change. It is a fundamentally big change.
There was Nets Twitter is a fantastic place. Every time Harden doesn't get a foul call, you get the clip immediately on Twitter and people yelling about how is that not a foul. But there was a moment in the Bulls game where I forget who was defending him, but basically clotheslined Harden as he was going to the hoop and there was no foul call. Like ripped across his arms and his chest, and Harden wasn't able to get off the shot and he doesn't get the foul call. And Nash has talked about this. It's a huge deal. The guys in the NBA referees manual, the virtual manual that I'm sure that they pointed out as saying, these are irregular basketball moves and don't allow foul calls on these. They're showing Trae Young and James Harden. I guarantee it. And so all these refs are attuned to the fact that when I referee Harden, I'm just not going to give him, I'm not even going to give him the benefit of the doubt. It's almost like, you know how classically in the NBA, stars get calls. It's actually the opposite for James Harden at this point. He is being negatively treated because of his former success.
The film room is like, it's like Clockwork Orange style. They're just showing like images of, and then their cognitive biases are just completely overloaded with James Harden footage of him doing the worst of the worst.
I imagine it's a mix of Clockwork Orange, the scene? Matrix. Like all referees are all wearing their like gray and black little uniform and they're strapped into the seats and there's a cord plugged into the back of their head and they're just seeing, you know, like now they know Kung Fu. They're just seeing calls constantly and now finally realize, oh, James Harden was doing a lot of bullshit before, and now we can't let him happen.
I think the primer of just seeing a lot of James Harden in the like infraction footage is what we're talking about in terms of building this immutable cognitive bias that we've been seeing now, and it's terrible. And it's terrible.
I urge everyone, go to Basketball Reference. If you are someone who's like, James Harden's just as good as he always was, go to Basketball Reference and just look at his per game each season, that simple graph that they have for his career. It's a dramatic shift on two point percentage
that even you will be able to understand.
Attempts simple in terms graph. Of shots inside inside the arc. You know, 3-point attempts are down drastically too, and free throws. Everything across the board, every possible shot that James Harden could be taking, from 3-point attempts, 2-point attempts, and free throws, they are all down. And
meanwhile, in a season where his usage should have been increased from last year. Like, he's, you know, has taken on more of a role, or should have taken
on
more
of a role. Well, and I think part of, so Harden hasn't looked as good, but I do think he deserves some credit for earlier in the season. I think it was very pick and roll heavy, particularly with Nick Claxton in there. Nick Claxton not being there, the bigs that they have on the team aren't pick and roll bigs. They're pick and pop bigs. Harden deserves some credit for sort of dialing back the I dominate the ball to such a degree that everyone else stands around. Now, I don't think the offense is flowing. We've talked about that. But he is shooting the ball much less than he ever has in his career, and he's getting the free throw line much less than he has in his career. His assists are still basically what they were, and his turnovers haven't dramatically increased. They're actually a little bit lower than they have been over his career. So, like, part of what the point to, we'll PPG points per game. We all analyze PPG. Oh, his PPG is down. So many people are having conversation on the streets about his PPG,
about PPG
points per game. Yeah. It's really down also because he's just taking fewer shots and he's at the free throw line a lot less.
Can I add one little divergent thought?
Great movie, Divergent.
When you were talking about Nick Claxton, I am more convinced than ever in the Steve Nash strategy of showing people what they like, showing them the thing. Like, this is going to happen with Cam Thomas again soon. Showing them what, like, they're all clamoring for, and then realize, like, oh, actually, we don't want that, and then taking it off the table again. He's done this so expertly with Nick Claxton. You don't hear anybody being like, where's Nick Claxton? He's getting DNP'd now, and, like, it's a maybe not good. He's back in the G League. Who knows where he is? Whatever. But, like, you don't hear a peep on Nets Twitter about it or anywhere else because, like, we did see the Nick Claxton experiment play out, and it wasn't super duper.
Well, it's actually attractive. The best thing. I mean, the best thing for Nick Claxton would have been if he was averaging 20 and 10. So I shouldn't say it's the best thing for him, but it's actually kind of good that he failed so spectacularly at the beginning. He gets an illness, which stinks, but he goes away, and then he can slowly work himself back into, like, what he should be. Like, Nick Claxton is a guy that should have a long runway in terms of development. And, you know, he was kind of shoved into the spotlight because Nash wanted to see what he had, and he failed. He failed pretty spectacularly.
I think Nash knew what he had and wanted to be like, here, Nets Nation, see what, behold.
This was a direct shot on Twitter. Well, this was to Twitter. If Nash in a press conference.
I know. He made his,
like,
decisions based on reply guys
said,
on Twitter.
Twitter, you happy?
You did this.
You've ruined our boy, my precious boy. the Claxton Anon group out there, the Claxtonons.
There's a few of them.
So to assess James Harden so far this year, let's just say the broad statistics, 18.5 assists per game and 8 rebounds. He's averaging 4.5 turnovers, which really isn't that great, but 2-for-1, basically turnover to assist. He isn't getting to the hole as well. He doesn't have that burst. He obviously isn't getting to the free throw line. We've talked about that. I wonder if his hammies are actually an issue. Like, do you shut him down for a week or two? Like, I'm not a doctor, but, like, is that... what's the thing that's going to make his hammies the best? I guess playing basketball is the thing that will help him the most.
Not a doctor, don't know. But the fact that he played back-to-back games to me indicates that, like, they're not, and played a boatload of minutes, that they're not doing. If there's attention being paid to the hammies, it's not in the play less spectrum.
So I will say, I remember this as a Wizards fan growing up. When Russell Westbrook last year came to the Wizards, he looked awful at the start of the season for the Wizards because he also had hamstring issues. And Russ was going through a lot of different injuries. And he played through it. And by midpoint of the season, he looked like the triple-double monster force that Russell Westbrook is and played that way through the rest of the year. Whether you like Russ or not, like, he looked like what we remember. We talked about with Jeff Green when Jeff Green was on the show, friend of the show. Jefe Colon Verde.
Convert, please.
We brought up, I was like, you know, we talked, he's good friends with Russ, and we talked about, he looks like old Russ. He looks like the Russ that we remember from OKC. So Harden, you know, we're 11 games in. I just fear that, like, is this is a great player still, but is this the player that we're going to get? You know, is this the if it is, then Sean Marks needs to sneak into Kyrie Irving's West Orange home or East Orange and stab him with the vaccine. Just needs to have it. And like in the scene in Dune when they send in the Seeker into Paul Atreides' room.
Mm-hmm. Spoilers. Shit, come on now, Mike. People.
But this isn't really a spoiler. Like it's within the first third of the movie. I'm not telling you what happens at the end of Eternals. You know, you know who pops up at the end of the Eternals. I'm not saying it.
Don't. You have to be more sensitive to this, Mike, for the people.
They send in a thing to kill the spoiler. What the hell is that? Like a spoiler? That's like he's a little prince who people want to murder.
If you're listening to the show and you haven't seen Dune yet, spoiler alert, watch out. Mike's spoiling. Doing it again,
Nita
guys.
Nita Khan, friend of the show, did tweet out that this really crushed my soul. She said, I'm just glad you guys that Brian basically stopped Mike from announcing spoilers of Dune before I saw Dune. And that was crushing to see someone like Nita Khan say to us, hey, Mike, you're an ass. Like, essentially, Mike is a bad person.
Yeah. Read between the lines. You're gonna. It's here, right there. Read between the lines,
right,
Mike.
Not everyone views the same things that I view at the same time.
You gave up. I don't watch Ted Lasso, but you gave up
Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso. Ending,
like, there's nothing to give up with Ted Lasso. You play soccer.
Someone emailed us and was like, "You ruined that."
I don't even know what
me.
I could have given
you,
up.
Like, you ruined it. Yeah.
next week we should do a redraft of the Nets roster. And cause I think Brian and I, our season preview episode was we drafted the Nets roster, him and I taking players back and forth. I wonder how different it would be now. Cause I think
you have Kevin Durant, but I have LaMarcus Aldridge.
Checkmate. I think I took like Nick Claxton.
We haven't even talked about Paul Millsap in I feel like a month. Like there's people on this roster who, you know, are falling through the cracks roster.
Let's do stock up, stock down.
Yeah, we'll do that next week. I don't know. Are we
basically who's the Bitcoin, who's the Ethereum, and then who's like the General Electric stock?
I don't have. How much do I actually need to start paying attention to this? I don't care at all, and I can't to like any of the crypto.
I mean,
shit.
It's
like,
the future.
I just cannot,
but if you don't care about the future, then
it's like not that I don't care about Pokemon, you know, in theory, but it's like, you know, talking about like, oh, Ethereum, it sounds like a Pokemon to me. Like, okay, what's his powers? What does he do? Great, cool. Like, keep it moving. Could be a shampoo.
Put all your money in Bitcoin. You're going to be happy. You're going to be happy.
That'll be
good.
Okay.
Can I ask you real quick something, Brian?
I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. So Patty Mills, it's kind of glaring when Patty Mills doesn't shoot the ball well because he's so I love this mentality, and I apologize to the Patty Mills mafia out there what I'm about to say, and please don't come after me and my family. I understand the thing I'm saying is blasphemous. I love Patty Mills, but because of his confidence and because of his mentality, I'm going to keep taking good shots, because if I can keep taking good shots, I will eventually hit them. And he is shooting a good percentage this year. It's pretty glaring when he was taking all those shots and he goes 2 for 9 from the field and 1 for 5 from 3. He kills possessions by missing those shots, like everyone does when they miss a shot. Should I care about that, or should I be happy that Patty Mills is not afraid to shoot?
Well, I think what's maybe the takeaway is that Patty's not afraid to take up the mantle of leading the offense of the second unit. But he was never supposed to do that. That wasn't supposed to be his job. He was supposed to be elite spot up shooter guy / combo, somewhat playmaking guard next to Kyrie Irving, next to, you know, like this is the reason why the Kyrie Irving thing is so triggering. It's because the downstream effects of it puts pressure on everybody else. And I think the person who's feeling the pressure the most out of anyone would be Patty Mills, who's then tapped. He's like, you're basically like Kyrie Irving. He's like, I'm really not. I'm like, I want to be. Don't get me wrong. I would like that a lot, but I'm not. And I think that's what he's warring with more than like that. Cause like, I don't think he wants to do any dribble drive mid-rangey like shots that he's trying to do. I think he wants to just plug open open spot up threes. That's, I think that's what he's made, what he's, he, well, that's what he was thought my job was going to be. And now it's not. And like, you know, he's been a good sport in terms of taking on that extra load, but it's not natural. It's not what he's
it's like when
doing.
I interned for Sirius XM, NASCAR radio, I was an intern.
Yeah.
And then suddenly by the end of the summer, but I was
a lot of responsibility. Yeah.
A weekend roundup show. And I'm like, hey, great. Love the responsibility. Wow. Not doing a good job, guys. Really.
Yeah.
Not getting paid.
I'm dropping.
I'm driving
the
down
ball.
To DC and I'm paying for my own parking and I'm also not getting a salary and I'm now doing a show and I'm not doing a good job. So
that's amazing. I've never heard that. Was there, did you have like stress dreams about that? That sounds like a stressful, that sounds
no,
like
no,
a
no. It's like one
me.
Of those things where like, I didn't even realize I was producing a show until I was like, oh, I'm actually producing the show.
Yeah.
And it wasn't good. Cause I also don't know NASCAR.
And then, and it prepared you to produce this masterpiece. So thank goodness.
Kyrie Irving, a perfect transition point, and I appreciate you for bringing it up. So we've had some interesting developments since we last potted. Last week, we were kind of living in the glow of Eric Adams, the mayoral-elect in New York City, saying he's going to revisit vaccine mandates. Then he had another interview, which was after we potted, him saying, you know, I can't understand how politicians don't understand this, but he was basically like, the NBA and Kyrie will have to come to a decision, which is like, it's your guy's mandate, which is fine. Yeah. I support mandates. I'm just saying it is the city's.
Do you think
ordinance.
They know? Is this like, I can't even tell. Like it's so consistent now that people have not gotten that correct. Like, is it just a way
to
dodge
it's
the
a way
question?
To dodge
or like, I don't,
because what happens is the people asking these questions. And so this was, I'll provide context. This Eric Adams interview we're referencing was with Wolf Blitzer. And Wolf is a basketball fan. He's a huge Wizards fan, which is hilarious. Huge.
What? Is that true?
Like,
I
he
didn't
goes
know that.
To like,
are you
like
Wolf
20
Blitzer?
Games a year at least. Huge.
Oh, I love that.
It'll take like selfies of him at Wizards games. It's so cute.
Get
out so
of
lovely.
Here.
So he asked Eric Adams specifically about Kyrie Irving, and Eric Adams said the NBA thing, and Wolf followed up and said, actually, Mr. Mayor, it's the, you know, Mr. Mayor-elect, it's the city's policy. And Eric Adams then says, well, the city's not changing their policy, so it's up to the NBA and Kyrie to come to an understanding. Now, people are really hanging on to the fact that Eric Adams said the city isn't changing their policy, which I do want to say one thing. And then we'll get to the Kyrie Irving point. It would be incorrect to assume that the city will never change their policy, because these policies come into place to account for like high points in coronavirus. And the hope is maybe by next spring that we will, you know, more people will be vaccinated and we will all feel better about coronavirus. And then we can do away with some of these mandates a little bit. That would be the hope. We all should hope that mandates go away at some point. Blah, blah, blah. But we're living in this shifting reality where it really does seem like, I don't know if you feel differently, it just doesn't seem like New York City is going to change their Kyrie Irving policy, essentially, right? Like, I don't think anytime soon. Certainly, it certainly won't change when Eric Adams initially goes into office on January 1 and before the trade deadline, which is mid-February. So, we maintain that Kyrie Irving will remain unvaccinated most likely until forever, basically.
And here's the problem with how these types of situations work. Now both sides are dug in, and there's going to be a perceived win,
yes,
a symbolic win for either side. And that's where things get stupid and nasty. And so, like, basically, I don't know, I can't speak to whatever Kyrie, but like, you have to imagine that if Kyrie gets the vaccine and comes back, that'll be seen as a win for team vax and blah, blah, blah. You know, it is, but it's stupid. And
do you think
that's
Kyrie
how people operate, unfortunately,
cares about that?
I think he does. I'm just going to go ahead and say, I think he does.
So I want to bring up a few data points that we've also gotten. Adrian Wojnarowski on Thursday had said, and we've talked about this a little bit, but that basically teams are calling the Nets. Okay. So we get that. That's obviously coming from Sean Marks, the fact that teams are calling the Nets and they're taking calls on Kyrie Irving, though there's never been even a hint of a trade. Then Mike Scotto, who used to cover the Nets for The Athletic and now I think works for Hoops Hype, had a source story talking to league executives about Kyrie Irving's trade value. And Scotto, via these NBA executives, all the executives are basically like, this is the quote: "For the most part, every front office and coaching staff is scared to death of Kyrie and doesn't want to touch him," one NBA executive told Hoops Hype. "Honestly, it might have been four teams before this, his refusal to get vaccinated. He's just, and I don't really know what that means. He's a guy that front offices don't trust. Coaches don't want to deal with him. Players like him," which is nice. I think that's a bit of posturing. Like, I think we extrapolate too much from one executive saying that is also kind of like a bullshit circumstance. Because let's say that executive is Monty McNair, who runs the Kings. Well, if Monty McNair's owner decides that he wants Kyrie Irving, he's going to force Monty McNair to do that. And also, a lot of guys, like, not to bring in Aaron Rodgers, because I think we've all had enough Aaron Rodgers, Kyrie Irving discussion. But you hear a lot of NFL executives sourced reporting saying, oh, this is hurting Aaron Rodgers' trade value. If he actually was put back on the market by the Packers, every team in the NFL would want him. Now, Kyrie's different because he's burned basically every bridge he's walked over. He's demolitioned. Didn't they blow up some bridge in Saving Private Ryan? Wasn't that part of the thing?
Yeah, it was a French
tiny
bridge.
Tiny French bridge. Isn't that the other name for the movie?
Yeah.
It was gonna, yeah. That Saving Private Ryan was going to be Tiny French Bridge.
The day they blew up a tiny French bridge.
What a great alternate title.
Yeah.
Kyrie's obviously a different case. We've talked about this before. I still think, Brian, there is trade value for him. Do you think, like, if you are another team in the NBA, and I have teams that they could possibly be interested in him, do you think that there's value to Kyrie Irving, knowing that he will remain unvaccinated, knowing that he's an unreliable person?
It's so tough. And I kind of just go back to the timeline of, you know, to invoke your arch nemesis now, Nick Wright, and how he just kind of came out of nowhere, teleported into the Twitter sphere with a hot take of, like, Kyrie Irving, like, could retire. And that was like, that's insane. That's an insane thing to just put out into the world before we knew anything about any of his stances about whatever. And now it looks like, I don't know, would you put the odds that he retires at like 20%? I mean, it seems plausible now in a way that, like,
and like initially when like, you say 20%, I feel like that was low, but then he said specifically, I'm not retiring. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, but his actions are on the retirement pathway right now. He's more towards retirement than not at the moment. I mean, he's not playing basketball, which is
super retirement-y,
you know, symptomatic of retirement. But he, it's, to answer your question, I don't have a real ready answer other than, like, everything that seemed impossible with him just seems on the table now all of a sudden, like, literally everything, the whole gamut. So whether it's retirement or somebody offers him a max contract next year and he comes back,
like, Croatia, like, he goes to some Charlotte team in Belgrade. Right. Like, couldn't you see Kyrie doing this stuff on Marbury Path and just totally, ending up in absolutely. China or somewhere in Eastern Europe and playing for $100 million a year? The thing about Jerusalem is they're very pro-vax.
They're very vaxxy.
So he wouldn't be allowed to play in Israel, but Eastern Europe, for sure.
Yeah. They're lax. Well, they're lax. But my point is, like, we could speculate. I think ultimately somebody will offer him a cut, like, deferring to Rajah Bill, somebody will offer him a contract. Does he get let's say he doesn't play this whole year, just as one of the many, you know, in our flow chart of possibilities here, one of the many doesn't play this year, is looking to play next year for a team that doesn't have any mandates. Does some random, I don't know, pick a team come up and offer him that 4-year contract, 5-year contract? Right? I mean, well, not the Knicks, because they have ostensibly might have a mandate still then. Miami.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you're
whoever.
Yeah,
I think a team does come through. I mean, I just want to, this is real quick. So Danny LaRue, he works for The Athletic. He's also on, what's the show with Nate Duncan, where they talk about Dunked On?
Dunked On? I think.
Danny writes also for The Athletic and sort of looked at like what the salary cap space for teams next year will be. And these are the teams that will have significant cap space. The Detroit Pistons, the Orlando Magic, the Spurs could have decent amount of cap space, anywhere from like $18 to $30 million. And the Memphis Grizzlies only were going to have like 15 to 18. So there's not a ton of cap space next offseason. Like, what is Kyrie Irving's contract going to be? It could not be a max contract.
Yeah, but my feeling is like people move stuff around.
I understand.
All the time. You know, like
you those can, are teams yeah, that yeah. It would be tough for me to see him. Like Orlando makes sense, but they're actually doing it. They have a nice thing with Cole Anthony and Jalen Suggs, who they just drafted, and they've paid Markelle Fultz, and he's going to come back from injury at some point. You know, if I'm Orlando, I'm like, I'd rather just have Cole Anthony, who seems like a delightful person, than Kyrie Irving. The thing I will point out is, but even before I get to like the hypothetical teams that could want Kyrie Irving, what's going to happen is if the Nets get serious about trading Kyrie, usually the Nets keep things pretty buttoned up, right? Like we don't hear about the big moves that happen until they happen for the Nets. The disadvantage that they have in this situation is I would imagine any team that wants to trade for Kyrie Irving must have a conversation with Kyrie before they get him and say, hey, do you want to play basketball? Would you play for us? Would you sign an extension if you did in fact want to play basketball? You know, and all those type of things. And by having those conversations, I think it leaks out in some way before we get to a possible trade. Like, I think there's going to be this whole slow drip of news saying the Nets are actually considering offers for Kyrie. The next one is, hey, it's these teams. And then it's, hey, these teams want to talk to Kyrie. Hey, they did talk to Kyrie. And then this is the information they found out. Like, I don't think it's going to be a sneaky trade. I may be wrong, but I don't think it's a sneaky.
I'm also just thinking about the world in which he comes back. And like, also even in that world, there's like this very interesting relationship that we have to have with Kyrie Irving, which is like, let's say he comes back and like pulls a calf muscle or something. It'd be like, now you're all of your sympathy chips or you've used all of your sympathy chips. Like, well, cool. You shouldn't have played or not played professional basketball for 6 weeks and
play flag football, touch football, right? Was it touch or flag?
it was touch, the lowest form.
I will say, again, there's been a lot of Aaron Rodgers, Kyrie Irving comparisons. Aaron Rodgers looking like such an idiot really helps Kyrie Irving.
I've been totally checked out on the Aaron Rodgers.
It was
thing, so I don't even
brutal.
Pay attention to football. Yeah,
it was brutal. The amount wild, of.
Can you give me the cliff notes? What do I need to know top level?
So he lied to reporters 2 months ago when he was in training camp and they asked if he was vaccinated and he said he was immunized. And then quickly talked about something else. Saying he was immunized, people took it as him saying he was vaccinated because they said, are you vaccinated? He said, I'm immunized.
I would have immediately picked up on
and
that.
And someone That's did. A, Michael yeah. Smith, who used to be at ESPN, who now works for Peacock and NBC Universal. He has like one of those PTI style shows. Literally when Aaron Rodgers said that, there's clips of him on his show saying, hey, we should not trust him because he's saying a word that doesn't mean that you're vaccinated.
yeah.
Aaron Rodgers like wasn't wearing masks all that time around media, which technically I guess he should have been. He wasn't wearing masks around teammates, which he should have been if he wasn't vaccinated. And then he goes on Pat McAfee's podcast, YouTube, radio show, all those things. And he says he consulted with Joe Rogan about vaccination procedures. He sent the NFL 500 pages of research about why he didn't need to get vaccinated.
Cringe.
That the woke mob was after him. That the NFL sent some stooge to the Packers to explain why people need to get vaccinated. Like he said all the things. He didn't want to get vaccinated because he didn't want to become sterile. So he basically, you know, it was anti-vax bingo. That Aaron Rodgers was saying. And I laugh because Brian and I, I'll just put it on me. We were so frustrated with how Kyrie handled his situation by basically not saying anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. In hindsight, if he said this stuff, then Kyrie may never play basketball again. Kyrie was smarter to just basically lie and not be fully honest and
not go mask off with the deep state conspiracy. That's surely
okay. But I do think Aaron Rodgers has helped Kyrie because it does lead to some appreciation for Kyrie to at least have the sanity to know I shouldn't say all the things I think, right? Where Aaron Rodgers is just saying what he thinks. Okay.
That's a weird state of sanity to be like, I know that what I think is crazy to hear for when other people hear it. So I can't talk about it. But it's a weird, yeah, but it is true to me.
It's the truth. Okay. Yeah. So yeah. And finally now at the 50 minute mark of our podcast, here are the teams that I think would want to trade for Kyrie Irving. And I've talked about this before. You look for the dumb teams and the desperate teams, the dumb owners and the desperate owners. And we're beginning our thirst. We used to have like a thirst rankings for the trade market, which we'll bring back when we get closer to the trade deadline. This is a version of the thirst rankings, Kyrie Irving trades. Look at the NBA standings and look at what teams are really not doing very well right now. There are three that stand out pretty clearly. The biggest, blaringest one that I've talked about before, but it needs to be emphasized again, is the New Orleans Pelicans. Brian, do you know what record the New Orleans Pelicans have this year?
They're
1-10. 1-10. They are sporting the worst record in the NBA so far. There are three teams that have one win this year. They're the only team with double-digit losses. That's a creation of the schedule. The Pelicans are a team that we know has intense pressure, it seems, around David Griffin, who runs the team from a personnel side. They just brought in Willie Green to coach this team. Zion Williamson looks like he's playing defensive tackle for the Packers and not supposed to be like the ball-dominant wing forward for the Pelicans. The moves that they made this offseason, Jonas Valanciunas has been good so far. Devontae Graham has actually been like okay, but he has a lot of volume for someone who's, again, they basically swapped out Lonzo Ball for. There are a lot of the young guys haven't stepped up at all. Tomas Satoransky, who they got in the Lonzo Ball swap, Satoransky doesn't play basketball really for them at all. Jackson Hayes, a really high draft pick for them in, what was it, the Zion draft as well. He doesn't play for them really at all either. This is an extremely disappointing team. It seems like Brandon Ingram has basically stayed the same. He's been good, but he's not, like, he's really just not that great. And Zion, we have no clue when he's going to be back. They are a desperate team. And when you have a desperate team with a desperate ownership who is ultra afraid that Zion may leave earlier than any rookie of his level has ever left a franchise, they are the perfect team to attack if you're Sean Marks. And Sean Marks has a relationship with Trajan Langdon, who's the assistant GM there. It is very easy for Sean Marks to call up the New Orleans Pelicans and be like, hey, you guys suck. We have a player who's really good, who fits your team. I've talked about this before. It would have three Duke guys on the team, three Duke phenoms and Brandon Ingram, Zion, and Kyrie Irving. Now, I've been trying to figure this out, Brian, and I've got a delicious piece of information for you that could really make an intriguing trade. I think you're going to like it. So I was under the belief that if you sign an extension with the team you're currently with, that you can't be traded within like 8 months or something like 8 or 6 months. It's why the Nets couldn't have traded Spencer Dinwiddie 2 seasons ago when they signed him to an extension. Jonas Valanciunas signed an extension with the Pelicans. But apparently, and I've been reading this and I would like someone to confirm it. So netspod@gmail.com. He signed it for just the highest dollar amount that he could that still makes him tradable right now. There's some amount of money that if you don't sign for more than your previous salary, you're still a tradable contract. Jonas Valanciunas has been a guy that I've loved dearly for a long time.
I didn't know
burly,
that. You didn't tell me that.
Tough center, averaging 20 points a game and 14 rebounds, Brian. What's the Nets' biggest problem this year?
Gosh, let's think.
Vaccinations and then rebounding. Sure. Now, Jonas actually maybe is pretty good, but if you're a desperate team like the Pelicans, if you get Kyrie Irving and you have to give up Jonas Valanciunas, I think you feel pretty good about that. If you believe that Kyrie's going to come back, I offer up, and there's a lot of salary mixing and matching that needs to be done. Jonas Valanciunas, Tomas Satoransky's expiring deal, and Jackson Hayes, because you need that salary, and Jackson Hayes doesn't play, for Kyrie Irving. The Nets get their 30-minute-per-game center who can be a big, burly dude, who can really soak up those rebounds. You can actually throw to him, get offense out of him in the low post. He can be the pick-and-roll center that really fits with Harden because he can also hit threes now. He's shooting 58% from three on two attempts per game. Now that's not sustainable, but that's pretty good as a center. He's an excellent free throw shooter. So you're not like he's at the end of games, you're not taking him off the floor unless if it's because of switching problems. And you send Kyrie packing to a team that is ultra, ultra desperate. I can't express to you how desperate the Pelicans are now. To think that a year ago that you were only going to get Jonas Valanciunas and some salary filler for Kyrie Irving would have been galling. Let me ask you, Brian.
Inconceivable.
Is it still galling? What's the gall meter?
It's not. It's really not galling. That's the gall meter in terms of gall. If we already like sectioned off gall, which is
gall Godot,
scale of 1 to 10, it's like a. I think you enter gall territory by like at a 3 at a 10 or something. And it's not that, you know, it's not that low. It's not galling in terms of like, is it possible? Do I like it? Does it offend me? But it is disgusting, you know, grand scheme of things. It's not great. And I'm, you know, even having to have a conversation, makes my skin crawl a little bit. So, but like if we're really, you know, if we're really in that situation, I like it. You know, I think you've convinced me. If it's between Kyrie not playing and watching him, you know, bugger off in the offseason and this.
So, and there's all these advantages to this trades for the Nets. And I can get to the Pelicans part, but this is a Nets podcast. So you guys can, you know, who cares? If you're a Pelicans fan listening to this,
who cares?
You get Kyrie.
Go find a Pelicans podcast.
35-5. You get Kyrie Irving. Okay. And you only do this if you know that Kyrie's not getting vaccinated. And he's not coming back for the Nets. I think there's a word with Tomas Satoransky is like a guy on this team, but he's an expiring contract and you can lower his bill or you can use.
Oh, we're assessing this like it's actually going to happen. Yeah, you really
you
bought
move
in on this
Satoransky in a different deal for another player. But just look at Jonas Valanciunas for a second. So your starting lineup is Harden, Joe Harris, KD, Valanciunas. And whether it's Bruce Brown, whether it's, you know, Patty Mills subbing in, Blake Griffin is at the four, so you just kind of go bigger at times. The good thing about Valanciunas is he's enough of a three-point shooter now that he's actually become a stretch five in a way. Now, he doesn't shoot the three that much, but he's good enough at it. I think last year he shot like 38% or something from a three. I'm pulling it up now. He shot 37%. The year before that, 35%. On a shot, a three-pointer every game, but that's a respectable shot. You have the 30-minute-per-game center, an elite rebounder, which you need on this team, and it allows you to not have to rely on LaMarcus Aldridge so much. And what it does is, and Brian, we've talked about this, I don't think Nick Claxton's meant to be a long-term future piece for this team, unless if he dramatically pulls his game out of his tilkus and starts playing really well. You can then move Nick Claxton plus Tomas Satoransky's contract and something else for a really good backup guard piece that you may need or another wing defender. You know, I love DeAndre Bembry, but you can elevate. So it actually opens up more moves for you if you bring in a real center like Valanciunas. And Valanciunas helps you against the Bucks. It helps you against the 76ers. It helps you against the Nuggets if you see them in the finals. Helps you against the Lakers. He's a guy you can rely upon in that spot. It lowers the tax bill on this team dramatically, which is going to matter if the Nets want to keep more fringe players on their roster that they can't pay the minimum. Because Joe Tsai seems to basically said, hey, we're going to keep our stars and Joe Harris and everyone else really can't be on this team anymore because I can't keep paying tax money. So there's all these advantages that you get better role players on this team and all that stuff. And for the Pelicans, they get Kyrie Irving. So I love it. I absolutely love it.
You clearly love it. You've written some compelling fanfic, and you've done some good world building. I hope it comes true for you, Mike. Do you think it'll happen? The thing I don't know is that
the Pelicans traded for Jonas Valanciunas for a specific reason, right? Like, if they still had Steven Adams, who they wanted to get rid of, it would have been pretty easy to get Steven Adams and Eric Bledsoe from them for Kyrie Irving. Now, if you're the Nets, like, I actually don't like hate that fully because I like Steven Adams a lot. Valanciunas is a better player than Steven Adams. And they wanted him for a reason. The thing is, this becomes one of those pressure situations where if the owner of the team finds out that they could have Kyrie Irving and the guy they have to give up is like a center who no one cares about, no fan is going to a game to see Jonas Valanciunas. The owner is going to say, I know how much you like the center, but we're going to get Kyrie Irving. We're going to get the anti-vax Kyrie Irving here in New Orleans, and he's going to play basketball for us, and he's going to make Zion Williamson happy. Jonas Valanciunas ain't making Zion Williamson happy.
It's a bold move.
That's my fake trade that I'm going to hold to my grave.
Good. Love it. Love it, Mike. You did it. Did a great job.
Thank you all for listening. I'll keep bringing one fake trade per an episode. We'll eventually get Kyrie Irving to the Lakers at some point. Thank you so much for listening. Yeah. If you are listening right now, go to iTunes or go to Apple Podcasts. I don't really think, who's using iTunes, as we discussed. Go to Apple Podcasts and rate, review us. 5 stars. We need them. We want to have them. We appreciate you all. We're going to get some fun guests coming up. We did reach out to Darren Williams's people, so we'll let you know
putting that out there into the Twitter sphere.
Darren Williams is going to fight on the undercard to the next Jake Paul fight, and we're trying to get Darren Williams to come on the show, talk to us about his career.
But a little MMA. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Hey, good stuff, man. Okay, take care, everybody. Bye-bye then.